What is going on, everybody? I'm John Anthony. If you're hearing this, you found Chair Shot Sports, one of the hottest and newest podcasts on the air today. Riding solo in the big chair today with a lot to cover. WWE, NBA, everything under the sun that's sports. So get aboard, let's hit the road, and let's get to it. What's going on, everybody? John Anthony here. Welcome to Chair Shot Sports. Usually myself and my cohort, the Mike. Mike still has some contractual things. He's finishing up with some movies he's filming. So luckily, he should be back for our next episode. All things stay the way they are now. So we're very excited about having him back. It's been weird doing this without him. Definitely a Two Stooges collaboration. It's tough doing it by myself. But we'll make do. We'll get through. We have. And we'll get through this one as well. So... it's been a little while since we talked, so I hope everyone's doing well. We're going into the fall season now. I know where you guys are, but where I am, winter is here and here for a while. Luckily, just the cold air and no snow yet, so knock on wood, that doesn't come for a while. So, lots happened. Last time we chatted, we were going over some stuff going on in the NFL. We were giving some predictions for the NFL, some stuff going on with coaches, teams, players, things like that. We're also talking about WWE Crown Jewel, so that's a good place to start. We can get there. We can go on after that. So Crown Jewel, I think Crown Jewel slapped. I think it was good. Out of all the Crown Jewels that I've watched and I've seen that I've been able to be a part of, I've got to say this one probably takes the cake as being the best one that they've had. Not for nothing, aside from obviously everyone saying, like, you know, it's too rushed, it's put together, stuff like that. It's, you know, things don't make sense. Storylines are kind of just mashed together to put on a show for these guys. I think it actually did really, really well. I can't complain. I'm not going to go over every single match. Predictions-wise, we can touch on that. But as far as, no championships changed hands, which is par for the course. It's really just, it's really these guys over there playing GM mode in a 2K game. They just kind of the matches they want to see and put together and have those guys fight. But it was good. I mean, the Edge, Rollins, Hell in a Cell, having that open and just really set the bar and tear the house down. That match was amazing. Edge just giving everything he can, 110%. I think it was great. Rollins was amazing. Definitely a good send off for the two of those guys being on different brands now and setting up their own other separate feuds now moving forward. But I think it was great. Great spots, just great overall. Those guys have great chemistry in the ring. And it definitely showed through on that match. It was good. The King of the Ring and the Queen's Crown finals, those were good. It's good to see. It was good to see Xavier Woods get that win. Finally come on his own little bit, coming on Raw the other day. He's got his own theme music now, which I think is weird, because if you look back, right, so Big E is singles guy, right? He's got his own music now. And now Woods gets his own after winning King of the Ring. And dude, Kofi's over here, Kofi Mania, holding the belt, having a run, and he's still coming out the New Day music. The guy couldn't get his own theme? At least go back to what he had before? Like... Doesn't make any sense, but it's good to see. I think it's gonna be. I think all three of these guys are gonna get the runs they deserve. Don't really know if Woods is gonna get that championship title run. I think it's one of those things where they might just do it right now because, and by right now I don't mean anytime soon taking it off of Big E, but down the road, making that come to fruition, with the other two members of the New Day winning it, and it's just kind of like. If you're looking at that group as a whole, what they've done with them already, and what they've accomplished, you know, inside the ring, outside the ring, and just being relevant and just being a face for that company for so long, what they've done, I can see Woods getting that title run. I don't know if it would be a lengthy title run. I think out of all of them, I think Big E's going to have the best run. I love Kofi's, don't get me wrong, but I think longevity-wise... And just, you know, obviously Biggie's a bigger guy. You can put a couple guys, other guys up against him. I mean, it's not a fluke that he goes against Lesnar and gets squashed in, you know, 8 seconds. So, I think eventually he'll probably get that run. And then all three of those guys will have been, you know, WWE champions. And just one thing you put onto their resume when they go into the Hall of Fame, which, of course, I'm sure each one of them will probably go... Well, you know what? Now thinking about it, I'll probably go in as a group. I don't think if any of the three of them alone would make it by themselves. I think maybe Big E, but I can't really see the other two really going in, having the credentials and really doing enough to warrant going into the halls of the Hall of Fame. But definitely as a group, I can definitely see those guys going in together and just, all being champions, the tag team champion records and everything they've done. Their accolades inside and outside the ring, I think, speak for themselves, so that'd be really good. So that was, that's awesome. You'd love to see it. Queen's Crown, Vega going over. I could have told you this, and I think I alluded to it a little bit. We talked last. I just couldn't see whether it be Doudrop or Carmella. It's almost like they knew. That's why they didn't put Charlotte in it. And this is before all the stuff happened backstage. Like before she was, having her issues with Becky. It was just one of those things where if Charlotte was in it, you knew she was gonna win it. And other people like Carmella and this and that and Eva, you just knew. Yeah, of course they gave it to them. So I'm sure someone probably thought Doudrop might win it because that's talk about the ultimate swerve. But Vega winning it, I mean, not my pick. I probably would put it on Doudrop because at least it's some kind of nice little story coming up, learning from Eva, get rid of Eva, coming back, coming into her own, that kind of thing. But Selena, all right, let it run, see what the course is. I just wish that these wins weren't just walking around with a crown and talking to people like you're a king and a queen. I wish they came with title shots and title opportunities down the road. That would have been a lot more of a selling point. But yeah, other than that, I think the tournament was good. I like the Queen's Crown. I like how they're doing it for the women. It's good to see King of the Ring making making a resurgence. I would personally like to see it go back to the pay-per-view format where they have all the qualifiers on, down the weekly shows, and then have the final two rounds on its own King of the Ring pay-per-view. I think that'd be cool. Maybe I just, I'm a sucker for the way they set up the stage and everything like that. That was pretty cool. That was probably one of my favorite stage setups was King of the Ring with the huge chair that they would come out underneath. That was pretty cool. But I'd love to see the King of the Ring pay-per-view come back and stay, not just come back and fill in a spot. But that's just me personally. Then you get the usual down, RK-Bro retaining, Becky retaining. The Goldberg-Lashley match, that match lasted probably 12 minutes and 45 seconds longer than I thought it would. Great way to kind of end it and have Goldberg get his retribution and have, get his pound of flesh, quote unquote. And obviously, I mean, he has one more. And hopefully I don't think you're going to be putting him back in the title picture. I think they understand, they know that's the one that's not what the fans want. That's just not what we want. I mean, he was a great champion when he had it. He's a believable champion. But obviously, we all know he's a part-timer. He's in his 50s. He's not going to be hitting the road and going full-time. So unfortunately, him winning a belt is going to be very short-lived, 1 month, maybe two if you're lucky. But with one more match, I would have to believe it's probably going to be quiet for a while and pop up back around February when WrestleMania season comes around and call somebody out. I can't right now, thinking off the top of my head, I can't really think of someone he might call out. But I would think it's going to be something to close the page, close the chapter on, and a rivalry, something that's probably spanned a while that he's been in WWE with. Can't really think of anyone that's there now that was in any kind of WCW or anything like that. So all those guys are in AEW now. So, but yeah, I think that'll be, hopefully he gets the match he deserves. And honestly, Goldberg has been there. He's been the guy they called when they need people to show up and help and do things. And he was always there. I hope he gets the match he deserves. And whether he puts somebody over or whether he gets a rub and he wins and he walks out, head held high. And who knows if he re-ups on another Legends contract, signs up for any more matches. But I, for one, I know I've called him Oldberg. I know I've crapped on him before, the 3-minute matches. But for what it's worth, when he finally did decide to make the jump, and to come to WWE after his AOL Time Warner contract ran out and he was pretty much not getting paid anymore, decided to make the jump over. I think, the things he did with Triple H and Evolution in the beginning and everything he spanned, with Jericho and the whole nine, The Rock, everything. I think he's been a good soldier. He's gone out there and just, you know, Vince is like, okay, listen, you're coming in for 2 months. You're going to hold the belt. You're going to win it. 28 days later, you're going to drop it. He's like, yeah, cool, whatever, man. He knows he's getting heat for it. But he's there. He does it. I don't think for him it's not really a paycheck. He said way back, and I think even when he first came back, there was talk. He talked about a little bit in the ring with Jericho and stuff like that. And he just wanted Gage to see him wrestle. And I mean, this big Gage in his final form appearing like at the pay per view. But that's really something you just want to do family wise and just share that with his son. And I think that's kind of cool. But yeah. Again, I digress. That match was good. The WWE match, I mean, we all knew Big E wasn't dropping it like that, but I think it was a good match for what it was worth. I appreciate it. I liked it. The Roman match, I mean, I'm not mad about it. I like the swerve. I like the throw the title in the middle. Who is he throwing it to? I like how people are still alluding to the fact that he's still rolling with Brock. Even Roman dropped some jokes and dropped some hints that that's his boy. But I think this is really just a ruse that they're just running with. I don't think, because like I said this last time, last episode, I've said it before with Mike. I just think it's too telling. It's too old. They did it with Sho and Lesnar before when he flipped on Lesnar. Like everyone was expecting Brock to walk out of their champion. Now that they've gone away from the Rock Roman matchup this year at WrestleMania, and they're actually looking at the one at SoFi Stadium in Vegas. I'm sorry, SoFi is LA. The Vegas Stadium. It's like Reliant. There you go, Reliant Stadium. I apologize. I'm sure a lot of people thought he was walking out of there. You know, not with the belt. You know, Heyman doing the whole thing that I will be walking out with the Universal Champion, liking it, not saying who it is. I like the whole ruse. It's typical Heyman. I guarantee you, him and Roman are writing the storyline. It's great. I love it. PS people guessing. Yeah, some people probably don't like it. Some people are getting sick of seeing Roman with the belt. But you know what? Who else is going to have it? Who? 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 Who else on SmackDown right now deserves to have that belt? Nobody right now. Nobody. No, it's not Brock. Brock came back on a 10-match contract instead of like a 3. So he's not totally part-time. But the guy's not here full-time. He's not going to be here every Friday. And I think Vince has learned enough now, having AEW, you know, down the street and around the corner, knocking at the door, knowing you can't be putting part-timers on with belts. You're barely keeping viewership as it is with people who have full-time belts. Roman is on every week. He takes 1 week off last week. I like how they're writing that, comes back, everything's in shambles, he's gone for 1 week, makes it like, you know, he needs to be on the show needs him, and that's great. This, his character, I hope, what, you know, after he drops the Universal title to whoever it is, whether it be Brock or whoever else, I'm sure obviously he's going to run back into it a couple times. He's going to have I feel like he's going to be one of those guys who, I mean, he's starting later in his career, but I feel like he can definitely have a good amount of Universal title runs and probably WWE, you know, championship runs before all said and done. The guy's in phenomenal shape, you know, even coming back from leukemia and things like that. The guy could probably go to his mid-40s. He's great conditioned. You use him right. A lot of the times, even the things they're doing now with him having the Universal title, he's defending every pay-per-view every month, but he's going out there. He's not getting physically involved. He's not getting, you know, wear and tear on him. The guy's literally carrying SmackDown, and SmackDown is, it's the flagship right now. It's the A-show. And they're better off for it. But overall, I think Crown Jewel was great. All the matches were good. I felt personally nothing was really rushed, quote unquote. There was no one out there trying to like, okay, hurry up. You guys got 8.5 minutes. You know, we call for the finale. Hurry up, hit your finish, get out. I think all the matches were good. I think they're starting to learn. This is the second pay-per-view that I've brought attention to that there's 8 matches. They're not going over that. They're not going too few either, but they're finding 8. They're making the storylines work. The matches are, I guess they bring a finality and they're acceptable. They give you everything you want. And for not for nothing, the matches aren't bad. They're good. They're well put together. I mean, they used to put out who produced what, but I don't know who's producing these matches, but they're getting better. I know they signed a couple other guys, older wrestlers. Names can't come to me right now. But I think they're being a lot more choosy about who's writing these matches, because The product is better. The pay-per-view products are better. Raw still continues to bring up the rear. SmackDown is still putting out great talent, great matches. But the pay-per-views, you can tell they're really taking the time. They really want it to mean something, and they really want the people to like it and appreciate it and not be like, oh, this crap again. You know, not that anyone has to pay for it. It's on Peacock. But still, I feel like they're putting a little more effort into it, and that's something I can appreciate as a long time wrestling fan. So I appreciate that. So, but with that out of the way, wrestling is usually something we talk a lot about here. But right now, it's that time of year. We got a lot of the sports going on. I mean, we got college football, NBA, NFL, NHL. We got a lot of stuff going on. So with the Crown Jewel out of the way, I think we need to put wrestling in the corner a little bit, put it on the back burner, not getting rid of it. We'll reference it. We're going to take a little back seat for a minute. And I definitely want to talk about the NFL. There's a lot of stuff going on right now. A lot of teams still going strong. A lot of upsets, a lot of stuff going on. This past week, we had a lot of things go down. A lot of teams where you're like, what happened? Can you believe that? Seeing the scores and being like, oh my God, I can't believe that team beat this team. There's that. I want to go over the latest round of the WWE releases. See, we're not going too far away from it. What that can mean as far as AEW. I want to talk about the Ring of Honor issue, the Ring of Honor stuff that's going on, and the issues they've had that's forced them to pretty much shut their doors, and all the rumors and all the things that are coming out about that. And obviously, I want to go over some Week 10 predictions for the NFL, some really good games coming up for the docket for next week. And I also want to go over the NBA. I want to give my top five for the East and the Western Conferences. My top five, who I think is really going to be in it going down the stretch and has a legitimate shot being the next NBA championship for this year. So, so with that said, we'll take a quick break. We'll come back and we'll get right into the NFL. Hey guys, what's going on? John Anthony back with you riding solo in the big chair. The mic will be back next week. So we've got to talk about some wrestling. I want to get into the NFL. There is a lot of stuff going on and off the field, which is crazy. Crazy. Last time we chatted, last episode, we were talking about the John Gruden debacle and all that stuff going on, him getting relieved of his duties. I really thought the Raiders would just kind of get a new coach, figure out what they got going on, and kind of just, you know, muddle through their year and deal with what's going on. But I cannot believe the incident that just happened recently with their number 6 overall pick, Huggs, and the unfortunate situation of him killing a young lady and her dog down in Florida. It's unfortunate. You hate to hear it. And everyone here at Chair Shot Sports, our thoughts and prayers and condolences go out to the families affected, for everybody, for Huggs, for the folks that are killed, and anyone else that was injured or affected by that accident. That's just a bunch of recklessness that really has no place in the NFL these days and ages. I mean, the NFL literally has programs, not so much for alcohol abuse, because I don't think it was an issue of him having a problem. I think it was one of those things where he was out the boys doing their thing, whatever he was doing. And these teams, every team has their own courier service. And they'll come and get you. You make a phone call, they'll send a car. They'll come pick you up, and they'll bring you to your house. And they'll bring you to the hotel wherever you're at, and you can sleep it off. And nobody's getting hurt. It's like an Uber for the players. And it's provided by the teams, which is wild they didn't use it. And again, I really hate to use the excuse, and I've heard it out and about, talking with friends, listening to, you know, social media, listening to these people on, you know, all weekend talking about football, that young and dumb. But it's, you know, I just don't feel like those are the things. Yeah, I'm sure when they made the offer to him, they told him, hey, we want you to play for Las Vegas. You know, we want you to do this. We're going to make you this and that. All these things, somewhere near the forefront, I should be like, listen, in case you decide to go, you know, get crunk, get wild out somewhere, hey, listen, we get this great service too. Something happens, you make a phone call, you send a text message real quick, we'll be there wherever you are, within 15, 20 minutes, we'll pick you up, we'll bring you home, you got to worry about nothing. You don't have to drive, you don't have to be endangered or anything. Obviously, it's hard to defend that kind of behavior going 156 miles an hour down a road, driving twice over the legal limit of alcohol. But what's forgotten a lot of this is he had a family as well. He had a, you know, he had a fiance and he had a daughter at home that's probably not going to see her father for a long, long time. And not a lot of people are talking about this either, but the girlfriend was in the car as well. And she's not exactly doing too hot. They're expecting her to make a full recovery. But if there's any injuries, if there are any, if they're going to be something she has to sustain long term or for the rest of her life. So, again, our condolences from Chair Shot Sports to everyone involved in that. And it's just one of those things where, it's unfortunate. You hate to see it. And I think the NFLPA needs to use this as a rallying cry. And this needs to be talked about more. You need to normalize this. Like, these guys are going to go out and drink. They're young kids. Just because you signed them to $10 million contract out of college. And, yeah, they play a kid's game at an NFL level, pro level. Doesn't mean they're not going to go out with their boys or by themselves or with their girlfriends, wives, fiancés, whatever they have, mistresses. I don't care. They're not going to go out and have a good time. That's what they're going to do. They have all this money now. I don't know. We don't know what their upbringing is. Maybe they never got to have this kind of luxury. So, yeah, they want to go live it up. They got millions and millions of dollars in their bank account now. They want to go drop $5,000 at the bar. Like, do you. Go do what you want to do. You know what I mean? After you have to buy mom and dad the cars and the houses and putting, you know, $10 million away for the college education for your kids, whatever you want to do with the rest of your $89 million, that's on you, man. So of course these guys are going to go out and drink. They're going to party, have a great time. This guy's young. He's not a vet. He isn't. I'm sure he wasn't rolling seven deep with anyone else from the Raiders. This needs to be normalized, needs to be talked about, almost like an orientation with freshmen that go into high school and college. You take these rookies, you sit them down, and you're like, listen, we all know it's going to go to your head. You guys are wicked pumped. You want to get out there, do what you want to do with your fame and your money. But you got to be smart. You got to be responsible. You guys represent an NFL team. The same thing I said last episode talking about John Gruden. You have a responsibility. You play in the NFL now, all right? This is a corporation. It's an organization run by millions and millions of dollars. Stockholders, just fans, season ticket holders, people that the owners have to answer to. And if you're acting a fool, it's really hard for the owner to excuse that away and make sense for you being on the team. Unfortunately, this is like the way end of the other spectrum of this, where these things, there's no coming back from it. I mean, you're looking at jail time, court cases, unfortunately, a lot of other stuff. But there needs to be, like, you need to sit these rookies down in the classroom and have Goodell walk his ass down from his high throne, come down and talk to these kids. You know, have the president of the NFLPA in there. Have these guys come in there. Have some of the veterans come in and talk to these kids. Listen, you're going to go nuts. You're going to go, you have those nights where you're, you know, blowing your money on God knows what. And that's none of our business. But we want you to be smart about it. Don't be afraid to make a phone call. You don't want your wife to know. You don't want your girlfriend to know. You don't want your boyfriend to know. You don't want your husband to know. It doesn't matter. You don't want someone else to know that you're out, like, rocked and can't get home. Call this number. No questions asked. We'll be there. The courier service will come pick you up. We'll bring you to the hotel. We'll bring you to your house, wherever you want to go. We'll drop you off, and that's it. That needs to be normalized. That's what this needs to cry. I understand people are just – I've heard this go so many different ways and so many different outlets of the topics of this is bringing up. It needs to bring up that these are kids that are getting signed out of college and given millions of dollars, the keys to the city. Especially like someone like him, top 10 talent. The kid had a beautiful, beautiful career ahead of him. Could have flourished in Vegas. And now look, and now it's all gone. It's ruined. He'll never play in the NFL again. Like, good luck. Maybe way down the road. You're talking like classes and this and that, and, you know, going to organizations and helping nonprofits, maybe getting back in. But this is like, this is rough. This is rough, and it's unfortunate. But I think this needs to be a call to arms for the NFLPA and the NFL itself to really crack down and understand these kids need some guidance. Some don't have a father figure. Some don't have a mother that they can go home to. They don't have that. And they're kind of just out there, you know, hanging with the boys and all these millions of dollars. And when I make these, I'm not trying to make this a white or black thing. There's plenty of white dudes doing stupid stuff too, just as much as you're African-American. It doesn't matter. You need to sit them all down. And they all need to understand that you guys, Yeah, millions of dollars. You're playing a kid's game, but you have a responsibility to yourselves, your families, our season ticket holders, the fans, and the owners, the people that drafted you to pay you this money to play for this, play in this league, and play for this team. I really think that's what we really need to take out of this. That's something that I hope Goodell works, and I hope it's in the new in the next contract with the NFLPA and the NFL. Because honestly, I really think that's what we need to do: normalize that these kids need to know that they have somewhere they can call, someone they can turn to when they don't have anywhere to go, that they have someone that no matter what, hey man, we don't care. We'll come pick you up. We'll make sure you're safe. And by them being safe, everyone else is safe. Then they're not making bad decisions. So again, I wrap all that up with again saying it's an unfortunate situation, and our thoughts and prayers go out to the families affected by the events that occurred. So speaking of bad decisions, Aaron freaking Rodgers, what are you doing? Really though, what are you doing? You're out here lying about COVID, lying about getting COVID shots, bro. Your team is literally, your team was 7-1 and about to move into the Super Bowl like conversation. You go and your non-vaccinated ass goes and just blows up this entire situation going on in Green Bay, which Green Bay had everything that they knew about everything. They were in on the whole thing. This guy's not wearing a mask on the sidelines. He's at the pressers without the mask. It's just like, what are you doing in a time and an era of social media and how everybody is just so under the microscope, and you can get, and they can just Thanos you and just cancel you, man, and just banish you. I know his career's coming to an end. He's got definitely a couple good years left. He's probably not playing in Green Bay next year. But still, like, there's, you know, God forbid you do have COVID. There probably might see some people you're around that might be a Manny Cooper, compromised, immune wise. And it's like, you probably should do them a favor and let them know you're not vaccinated. Well, not vaccinated the way that, you know, the NFL wants you to be. He's gone to his doctor and received a bunch of cocktail shots and all this other stuff, where he feels he's vaccinated. His doctors will sign off that he's vaccinated, but it's not the conventional way that we've all been doing it, getting our cards so we're able not to wear a mask and stuff like that. So I think it is wild. It is wild right now. Like, what is going on with Aaron Rodgers? Last I heard, they're talking big fines for the organization, him himself, but no suspensions, which I think is not going to go over well with a lot of people, especially depending on what camp you're in when it comes to COVID and things like that and the protocols and such. I think it's going to raise a lot of problems for the NFL. I think it's going to end up, I think Aaron's going to have to, he's going to have to put some time served somewhere because it's just not going to sit well with a lot of people. And it's saying, you know, why does all these other coach, a lot of coaches were getting, a lot of coaches got fired. People were getting traded, let go. They weren't allowed into the facilities. Look at Cole Beasley. Cole Beasley was about to retire. He didn't even care. And this guy goes and he's like, yeah, I got the shot. I'm good. And you haven't had it these 8 weeks? What, these 9 weeks? Like, what are you doing? What are you doing? Like, what do you think's gonna happen to you? You think everyone's gonna be like, oh, it's just Aaron Rodgers? Like, that, there's a sense of entitlement that comes with that that's just not gonna sit well, especially with a lot of NFL fans. And you're talking, this is a very COVID. I have my opinions. The mic has his opinions. Everyone has an opinion, okay? And we're not even going down that road because that's not what we do here. All right, we look at everything from a little, you know, from like that 30,000 mile up, we get down to certain things, but we're not going to go down the COVID argument. But it's so polarizing, even coming to the end of 2021, where something like that can really affect how a team's look. Well, who's to say? Okay, so Rodgers comes back, right? Serving whatever, you know, gets his negative test, come back, right? Let's say they go all the way to the Super Bowl. Like, it's going to be like, well, he shouldn't have, they shouldn't be there because he should have served, he should have had time served. He should have been able to play this week. Jordan Love is out there doing what he can, but he's not Aaron Rodgers, I'll tell you that much. So it's going to be interesting to see what comes of that. But man, to see, I could not believe when that came out. I thought it was something like, you know, maybe just he had COVID. But then I've come, all this other stuff's coming out, and that Green Bay was in bed with him. They're in cahoots with him the whole time. That's not good. That's not looking good for the coach. Not looking good for the, oh man, I'm telling you. Wild times in the National Football League, man, I'm telling you. But All right. So with that said, just giving a kind of a quick look over, week nine. I'll tell you right now, we haven't talked about it a lot because the mic hasn't been on. I've touched on it, but the Patriots are coming out of nowhere. Mac Jones is just looking like a phenomenal, phenomenal rookie. I mean, I'm talking, this kid could be rookie of the year. I mean, there's a lot of other guys out there defensively, both sides of the ball, but Mac Jones is out there putting up some stats that are pretty, pretty telling to what they're doing over there in New England. I'll be the first one to admit it. I'm not a Pats fan. All right, I'll be the first one to criticize them. I'll throw the shade. I'll let them know. But I got to tell you, the games that I've watched the past 2-3-4 weeks have been phenomenal. Jones is just picking it up, and even like when you watch him with his reads, like the first couple weeks, he's moving his head, he's looking around. Obviously, the defender's like, "Yeah, where are you going with it? We're watching where you're at." Now he's almost this past week. He's against the Panthers. He's moving his eyes. The head's not moving. Now the defender's like, "Wait a minute, where are you going with that? Wait a minute, hold on." They're waiting to see his head move, and he's already getting veteran tendencies, where he's checking down the right way. I mean, not for nothing, he has Bill Belichick. That's probably the one thing, my problem that I have with a lot of people around in New England, that now they're, you know, they're on the plus side, they're 5-4. They beat the Panthers pretty handily this week. And Sam Darnold are seeing ghosts. This guy, I'm telling you, like, if you guys got a backup, you might want to put him in. It was scary bad how bad he was playing this week. It was bad. But the one thing is, like, you know, a lot of people with, you know, Love, you know, Trey Lance, he's not even playing, so you can't count him. You know, over in Chicago, I mean, you have Lawrence. Lawrence is starting to put it together in Jacksonville, but I guarantee you he's not gonna have it all together probably until next year's OTAs, where he's really feeling it and feels, you know, the gelling together. It's just a lot of these, and people are just crapping all over these rookies. You have to understand, you still have Bill Belichick. And it's like, it's so funny, the Brady people who are like, "Oh my God, it was Tom Brady all these times." Look at Bill. Bill's proving you wrong every single week. But now it's okay because now you have a winning team, a winning product on the field every week. So, oh yeah, we all love Bill again. F Tom, forget Tom Brady, F Tampa Bay. But you guys all were up here like helping him be the number one jersey like sold in the league last year. But now it's okay because listen, I've learned this a long time ago, covering sports, listening to sports, watching sports, talking to sports about anybody. Winning is the best deodorant. You can stink the joint up. But the Pats, you know, looking like they might be, you know, not even close. And again, they also play in the AFC East. So the Jets and the Dolphins are pretty much a given that they're going to be at the bottom. So it really was going to be a horse race between Buffalo and we'll get into the Buffalo game today because, holy smokes, cannot believe the outcome of that game. But right now they're sitting 5-4. They're pretty much in a tie with Buffalo for first place in the AFC East. The Jets just continue to stick up the joint. The Dolphins can't figure it out. Tua is inconsistent. He can't stay on the field. When he does play, he looks good, but he's always constantly hurt, so they're kind of just shifting in quarterbacks. I feel like with that kind of system down there, the receivers can't get used to one guy. Obviously, Tua runs a lot more, depending on who they have, you know, behind him. I believe it's Jacoby Brissett. So he's a mobile guy too, but he's definitely not a Tua. So it's you know, it's confusing for the running backs, confusing for the whole, you know, the wide receivers, the whole team, the whole system on that side of the ball. So, but yeah. Speaking of the Bills, Gadzooks, upset. This has got to be the upset of the year so far. I'm telling you, losing to the Jacksonville Jaguars. You've got to be kidding me. I don't even care that they're in Jacksonville. You lose. You're one of the best offenses, Super Bowl pick coming out of the preseason, and you lose 9-6 to the Jaguars? You got it. There better be asses lit up in that locker room today, and chairs being upturned, tables being thrown, and you know, boards being broken, and walls getting punched, because these guys should be ashamed of themselves. And I'm not taking anything away from Urban Meyer, you know, Trevor Lawrence, Jack. Because any given Sunday, any team will go out there, they'll put you in the ground, and they're going to get a W on you and give you an L. It's been proven. Any given Sunday. That's a given. But it's just like the Bills losing in that kind of fashion. In a field goal shootout, you're losing to the Jaguars. If you lost 35-36 Oh, okay, I get it. Trevor got hot. The defense was getting tired. They had a drive at the end, boom, and they won. You couldn't put any points on the field. You couldn't get any of your wide receivers. You couldn't get Sanders, Diggs, Beasley. You couldn't get Singletary out of. You couldn't get anyone in that end zone. You've got to be kidding me. You guys should be ashamed of yourselves. But you know what? Their loss is other people's gain. So now, you want to talk about confidence and Big Uncle Mo momentum moving over somewhere. It's moving into New England, and it's moving into a locker at Gillette Stadium. Because the one thing you don't want to give someone like Bill Belichick is give him that bulletin board material to show to his teams at practice and when they're sitting there looking at film. Start at the bottom. Now we're here. Everyone thought we were losers, thought you guys were a bunch of just Jags hanging out here. Nothing to do, not going to do anything. And now pretty much you're sitting atop the AFC East. So it's almost like Bill took a year off with Newton, and now he's right back where he started. And he has Mac Jones, the young predecessor to the GOAT. And this kid's going to play for a long time. I don't know how this is going to play out. It's still got a lot of football to be played. A lot of football to be played over the next 8 weeks. But I'll tell you right now, they go deep. Got dare say they make a Super Bowl. You're talking a resurgence that the NFL does not want, especially the AFC East, the AFC in general. With Kansas City sputtering, winning today again over a Green Bay team that did not have Aaron Rodgers, but a Kansas City team barely hanging on to 5-4, pretty much obviously the same record as New England, where they should be this, they were supposed to be them in Buffalo going to the AFC Championship. You're giving that much hope and that much confidence to New England and Bill Belichick. You don't want to wake that monster up. I'll tell you right now, you guys are building a Frankenstein that AFC does not want in the least. It's getting scary. It's getting scary over Gillette. And if Bill has his way and he puts the right pieces together, I'm telling you, it's going to be nuts. It's going to be spooky season all year, riding up until the AFC Championship game. So that's definitely something to watch. Definitely something to keep an eye on. The Raiders, again, I thought really in Las Vegas, they're turning around. Obviously, they have a lot going on. I don't want to say distractions, but it's hard enough overcoming when your head coach gets tossed for the things he got tossed for. You have an interim coach. And the players get behind that. When at the end of the day, when they explain it, you see what Gruden did. And a lot of players, I'm sure, weren't happy about the things that he did say. So it's easy to rally around a new coach, like, hey, let's get one for him. Let's make him feel welcome. Let's show him we're still a unit, And then this stuff happens, with Hugs, and it's rough, and that stinks. And now, not for nothing, the coach you can replace with another coach that's on the staff. Now you just took a piece out of your offense. Now you got to start plugging guys in. I mean, Renfro definitely had a lot more eyes on him in the offense when he was lining up in the slot. So that was that's definitely something that's hard to overcome. When you got to start going out there and changing your entire strategy, your entire game plan, and just your schemes and everything like that, and just little plays that you have here and there, got to change it all up. So that was interesting to see them go down to the New York Giants. Baltimore, every year you hear the jokes and you hear the people crap it on Jackson about being a glorified running back and not being able to lead his team. And when he does lead the team, they get to the first round, they choke out. But I'm telling you, there is something different about this year's Lamar Jackson. You see it on the sidelines. You see it when he's on the field. You just see it in the demeanor and the attitude. The cool thing is, this guy has a phone too. The cool thing is, he's got a Facebook. He's got a Twitter. They all see it. They're all seeing what you're saying. He knows, he hears it. He hears the voices. All right. He knows the criticism that he's getting. You got a coach like Harbaugh, which is top three, top four in the league. The guy's been around. He knows what he's doing. He can lead the teams, But I think this is a different Lamar Jackson you see on the field right now. And I think it's showing with these games. Like, the Vikings go down and they're like, yeah, check it out. Boom. All right, we're going to take you down. And Lamar's like, no, 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 no. We're not doing it like that. No, this is not what we're doing. We're going to go down there. We're taking this. We're not giving this up to you. We're going to take this. This is our game. I mean, obviously, it helps playing in Baltimore to have the home field. That crowd was raucous. What a crowd. What a crowd today at the game. Hell, I mean, hell of a game. It was great. So that was good. Cleveland came to play. Cleveland's defense, I could not believe what they did to Cincinnati. They held them to 10 points for the good part of 3.5 quarters. Amazing what Cleveland did today. Amazing. I mean, if they can keep doing that and showing up and showing out like that, I mean, they got a legit shot in the AFC Central. I'm telling you, they have a shot. Because, I mean, whatever downfalls that Baker will have, you know, with that offense, obviously OBJ getting out of there, we'll see where he ends up. That'll be interesting. But that defense can show up and they can hold until the offense figures it out and makes their move. I mean, you got Chubb, but I mean, there's going to be teams that are going to shut that down. So Mayfield needs to figure it out and have a game plan. But until he does, if that defense is shutting down other teams, it's scary. It's scary. I'm telling you, this is what I'm trying to say. Like, I don't know. What Kansas City, you know, Kansas City has been. I hope they were really excited. I hope they enjoyed it because a lot of these teams are coming for them and they're coming to play and they're getting good. A lot of teams that have been down for a long time are sick of being down. And all you gotta do is look at the standings. I mean, you shouldn't be, and you should never be really scoreboard watching this early in the year. We're a little over halfway through. You know, it's like you shouldn't be scoreboard watching. You shouldn't be looking over your shoulder and watching the TVs, but. Not for nothing. You got to open up the paper, and you got to see the standings. You got to know we're tied. We're one game out, and we still got X amount to play. So if you get discouraged, you have a bad game. You got to go look, and the coach has got to tell them, "Listen, we are not anywhere close to being out of this." It's every team and every they should really just have everyone should be having the control their own destiny mentality. Because you do. If you win, you're in. That's it. You don't have to worry about the losses. Every team's gonna lose. Just get more wins than losses. Win the ones you need to win. And then win some of the swing games. That's just how it goes. And teams like Cleveland and, you know, teams like Denver, it's like, and again, defense was the name of the game this week. Denver is just shutting down Dallas. I couldn't, it's nuts. Zeke, Dak, no one could do anything. Anything. I mean, they put a couple like gimme touchdowns on at the end, but I mean that was literally in trash time. The only team that just continues to be out there and be mediocre is Houston, and they have, I mean, not for nothing, they have a reason to suck. The quarterback they built everything around just isn't playing. San Diego showed me something today. Oh man, I'm telling you, Los Angeles. I do it all the time. I've been doing it ever since they moved there, and I'm probably gonna keep doing it for another year and a half. Los Angeles showed me something today. Philly really put their nose to the grindstone, really put their face to it, and they showed me something. They did. Hubbard showed me something. He looked good, man. He brought him down. They got the field goal, and not for nothing, their running game is phenomenal. I think they are very, very underrated when it comes to the running game. I think they're awesome, and put together with what they have on offense. And who they have under center, I think, and their defense isn't anything to shake a stick at either. A lot of the defense has won them definitely a couple of games this year, but I'm saying the NFC has always been the conference where that's where you really that's where you cut your teeth. That's where the real teams show up and show out. AFC, I'm telling you, they're really starting to build some defenses over there where it's that both leagues are really starting to come into where you see when they play the interconference. The NFC plays the AFC. You're not seeing these, you know. Look at Los Angeles. Look at Philadelphia today. I know. One's 5-2. One was, you know, 2-3-5. But you would expect the NFC, the Philly, to come in here and just kind of, you know, put their boots to them, show the defense, and kind of come in here and just take over a quote unquote soft AFC team. No. Now the defenses are matching up and you're getting close games. You're not really seeing a lot of blowouts. So. For that, I appreciate that. I like close games. I'm a fan of it. Everyone likes, you know, obviously a good romp and a good, you know, good missile show. But I like close games, man. It keeps people in the seats. It keeps your eyes on the tube. It keeps your eyes on the product, and it just showcases the defenses, the offense, and just it really it shows. I think it really goes to show who you have under, like who you have coaching that team and who you have under that coach to run the offense, run the defense, and such. I really show that. That's where it really shows who you have running those teams. But yeah, other than that, I think it was a great week. A lot of good games coming up down the road in the next couple of weeks. We'll go over week 10. We'll do some predictions. We'll talk about that. So with that said, with some NFL in the books, we'll venture back into the realm of the squared circle. And I want to talk about this latest wave of the WWE releases. A lot of shocks, a lot of awes. This class that got released is probably aside from Bray Wyatt being the last one in Braun Strowman, this one is a lot of shock and awe. And definitely had me like jaw on the floor, like, OMG, is this real? And I'm checking 14 other sources to make sure it's correct. So I was definitely taken aback. So yeah, we'll take a quick break. We'll come back and we'll talk about those. Hey guys, what's going on? John Anthony back with you, Chair Shot Sports, riding solo. The mic's on a little sabbatical this week. So, we talked about some wrestling before, we talked a little about NFL. I want to get back to the WWE, and I want to address and talk about these, the recent slew of quote-unquote budget cuts and the talent that has been released. I never thought I would see some of these names that came out on the list, a week ago, and the people who were let go. I am so just in shock, beside myself. These wrestlers that had such bright futures in the company, if used right, obviously always seems to be the issue. But if used right, I mean, some of these people were part of like groups, and they took them away and left the group by themselves. I don't understand how you pull them into a meeting and you like let them know, just so you know, you're going to go on without this one. Like, what's to stop the other people from being like, you know what, I'm out. You know what, we don't want that then. We came up as a group. We roll as a group. So, okay, before we get into all that stuff, let me just go through. There's a couple other people other than what I have on the list, but these are the ones I want to talk about because they're obviously a lot more prominent. They were in main events, on their way to main events, were a prominent part of weekly TV, whether it be Raw or SmackDown, or NXT. So we'll start at the top. Karrion Kross, Scarlett, Keith Lee, Mia Yim, Nia Jax, the Lucha House Party, Frankie Monet, Ember Moon, B-Fab, Harry Smith, who just got brought back to the company like 3 months ago, Eva Marie, which we all are thankful for that, and early Merry Christmas. But just to focus on these ones, because we will be here for 3 hours, we talk about the entire list. There's probably about another 8 to 10 people who are released on top of these folks. But let's just go down real quick. Let's just start at the top from what I read off. Karrion Kross and Scarlett. Karrion Kross and Scarlett have been released. If I had told you that, you would have thought this is an April Fool's joke. Yeah, they brought him up and they screwed WWE and Vince and whoever the hell decided to put some mask on this guy and split them up, screwed this product, screwed this gimmick up. It was not Karrion. They were actually repackaging him as being like this like split personality guy looking like the things. If you follow his Instagram and Twitter, things he was putting out, he was like looking like a 007 agent. You know, and the suits and everything looking like The Rock out here. And you're supposed to have this dark secret side. And that was the part that wrestles and hurt people and stuff like that. And I'm like, you guys screwed this up. Kross and Scarlett are one of the hottest things to come out of NXT to hit the main roster. And then you get rid of Scarlett, who, not for nothing, beautiful to look at, beautiful woman. She was part of his whole entrance. The whole entrance itself was amazing. That in itself people got amped for. And you went and split him up and put him in a mask and got rid of his entrance. Like, what were you people thinking? I don't know. Keith Lee, Mia Yim. I don't think I need to say more. I mean, Mia was, you know, on and off here and there doing things with Retribution. Was kind of supposed to come back and start being on her own, doing stuff. Keith Lee, that whole situation with not being well, having health issues, coming back and being repackaged, had 15 different themes. Half of them sound like they came out of the creative character vault from 2K. And then the Bearcat thing, who now that he's released, he has now gone on record saying that it was not his idea. he was repackaged and that was their idea. It's just nuts. Keith Lee was one of the biggest guys, probably bigger than Karrion. I mean, if you're looking at heel and face, like, they're trying to make Keith a heel when he's already over as a face. I can't. And you already had him have his run-ins with Roman. He had a run-in with Brock at the Rumble. Already setting up and planting these seeds where he could have easily just moved his way right into the mid-card, held the IC title, held the US title for a little bit, depending on what show he's on, and then boop, Royal Rumble comes around, haven't been one of the last four or five. There you go. Set it all up. Pop his ass into the Elimination Chamber. Have him be the last one or the winner. And maybe have him go on and win a title. I think it's a little too soon for that. It would have been a little too soon for that. So maybe have him get the Elimination Chamber, be the last guy that loses to whoever goes on the challenge. But this guy, the reason I start with these two is these two were no-brainers. You didn't have to go hard and repackage these guys and put masks on Karrion and give Keith a different theme and make him more shorts and then, you know, this, that, and the other. Like, you didn't have to try. All you had to do was let them go be themselves what they did and what they came up in NXT. Like, it doesn't make any sense to me. Nia Jax, there's a lot of conflicting reports. Some people say it was her COVID situation, being unvaccinated. She claims it's mental illness, or she needed, you know, her mental health days. She needed more of them. She couldn't come back when they wanted her to. I mean, obviously, where she was in storyline wise, kind of just broke. They broke up the tag team of her and Shayna. Really had nothing going on. She's been stale for a while. When she wasn't with Shayna, she has been stale. They tried her with Reggie for a little bit. No one really bought into that. It does suck. I mean, I love the people saying, like, being related to The Rock, I guess you're not ironclad. She was going on almost 10 years with the company. She did have some good runs, great things with Alexa Bliss, had some good matches. Her and Shayna did some things. I'm not going to knock her. I think she was horrible in the ring, horrible worker, a danger to a lot of other divas. Not as bad as Brie Bella, but definitely up there. But it's still shocking to see her let go. Lucha House Party, I get it. You got to get rid of, you got to clear, hey man, you got to make room, and unfortunately you guys got to go. Frankie Monet is shocking as hell, because once she was over in NXT, part of the 2.0 reversion, or rebirth, if you will, of the show, and, I mean, not for nothing, being married to John Morrison, that shocked me. Her being here, like, you know, they went hard on her vignettes with the cat. I'm sorry. Wow. It's been a long, my birthday was about 4 days ago. It's been a long week, rough weekend. So I do apologize for my miscues. So I just, with the dog and the whole thing, and just, I couldn't believe, like, she got let go. Ember Moon, she could never stay healthy. They gave her a lot of runs. I mean, they gave her, you know, they gave her the tag run in NXT, which was great. She could have done so much in WWE when she first got her call up, and unfortunately, you know, injuries plagued her. She couldn't stay healthy. And if there's one thing that Vince hates, not for nothing, it's really hard to blame this on people. Like, you know, you gave Triple H 1,500 chances. You gave, you know, Orton chances. Seth has a chance. Seth Rollins is probably the one person, the guy you want to look to in the blueprint. Sorry, Sasha. The blueprint of reinventing yourself. He was where he was. Like, the top heel, align himself with, you know, with the authority, all this other stuff. Then goes down. He's gone. He's a footnote. Has to come back. They don't know if he's a heel. Is he a face? Like, where do you put you? He can't, you know, ascend to the top. What do we do? And look where he is now. You know, the drip god. And he's, you know, he's he's got himself a contract for a title shot. And he's just bringing himself very slowly but surely back into relevance and making, but doing it in a way where whether you like him or hate him, you got to respect it. This guy could have counted out, been like, you know what, I'm done. I'll be a mid-card guy. Just give me the U.S. title. I don't care. Throw me in a tag team. I'll go grab the belts. But, you know, he's out here. He's working with Edge. He's jobbing. Whether he's going over or he's jobbing, he's out here doing work. And he's out here inventing this new character. I mean, it's just, if I've watched it from day one, and yeah, he bugs the hell out of me. It gets under your skin. The laugh, the way he talks, you know, coming out, try almost, you know, being like this like cult leader, to going to be just like now just a visionary. And like it's been amazing watching him like rework this and looking at it and looking in the mirror going, damn, that doesn't work. You know what does work? This does. I'm gonna keep this and we're gonna try this. I'm gonna put that and see if it works. And I love it. And that's why I love like his new theme is the two songs put together. The Burn It Down and his visionary theme. I love it. Because it's really a cross of those characters, what he has now, and it's great. And I think if it's nurtured enough, and they, you know, he has carte blanche, they let him do what he wants, you know, within reason, and that's the thing, it works. And whether he gets cheered, when he gets booed, some people like him, some people are cheering, singing along with the theme song when it plays. But regardless, he's getting the merch sales, he's getting over either way, and when you can do that, you start to have a lot more leeway of what you say you can and can't do, which is key with someone like Vince McMahon in charge. BFAB is just shocking. We're redoing. Okay, so let me get this straight. We redid NXT in a new vision, a new face of what we want to see, right? So we have NXT 2.0. You have Hit Row blowing it up. Awesome. First of all four of them were amazing wrestlers. Are amazing wrestlers. One of them isn't there now. They are amazing wrestlers. They're going to go far. That's a great faction. I hope they don't break it up too soon. Obviously, it will at some point, but hopefully they keep it together long enough where these guys can be very, very, very successful. BFAB was amazing. Great on the mic. Good in the ring. I mean, obviously had a lot to learn, but they all do. They just came up from NXT. But popularity-wise, they got enough to get over to SmackDown with the draft. BFAB was shocking to me, and it's one of the example I gave earlier. How do you rope the four of them into a room? And knowing Vince and knowing WWE, BFAB was even in the room. They already let her go, and they called Hit Row in, and they're like, hey, just so you know, we released BFAB today. You guys are on your own. We're gonna redo your theme. This is the direction we're gonna go in now. And now, like, and most recently on SmackDown, now it's Sami Zayn trying to be the leader of this group. I just want to know who, if all of these ideas and all this crap cannot be from the old man. It can't be. I know the man's out of touch. I get it. You can't be telling me he is the only one coming up with this crap. Who would stick this brand new, fresh, up from NXT, new blood, great look, so much potential, and they take Sami Zayn and trying to make him like their quasi leader? No, you can't be telling me that came from the desk of Vince McMahon. I'm sorry. There's other people out there that write these scripts. And he has that final say on everything. He lets the producers produce. I just can't see something like that where... And Vince is big on groups. He likes factions. He's been on record as saying that, and it's shown throughout. He loves putting random tag teams together. He loves it. He thinks it's great. He likes the groups. He likes that stuff. I don't think... He made the call on the BFAB cut and putting Hit Row by themselves. I'd like to know, and I'm sure it'll come out in time. The great thing about these 90-day clauses and these 60-day clauses, everyone comes out and everyone talks, and the truth always comes out. I mean, you have the left, you have the right, and the truth in the middle. And eventually it's all going to come out, and you find out what happened, the backstage stuff, whether it's politics, they wanted to leave, all that comes out, and it just sucks for BFAB. Harry Smith... I'm just, this guy can't catch a break. They literally just bring him back like 3.5 months ago. He's backstage at tapings. They got nothing for him. They're waiting to bring him out. Probably going to make a debut or resurgence at the Rumble as a huge fan favorite. Nope, get out. You're done. You don't see the end of the year. Crazy. And lastly, I touched on Eva Marie. I could have told you that bringing her back in the first place was just not, I don't know what you thought was going to happen with that. I don't know what photo she has of Vince with what diva, but it just wasn't the way to go, and I don't understand why you spend that kind of money to bring someone like her back. She's great to look at. I get it. Easy on the eyes if you like looking at plastic and all makeup. But it just wasn't really ever a great idea, and it definitely didn't come to fruition that Vince or the powers that be had in mind, so obviously she got released. Now, my big problem here is, they were all cut on the premise, and so was in the other groups, the Bray Wyatt, the Braun Strowmans, all these guys were cut because of quote-unquote budget cuts, right? it's not budget cuts. And we're gonna touch on a little bit today as more things come out and I hear more things. And obviously with Mike being back, we'll open up a little more of a discussion, just hear what he thinks and get a little more banter going. So WWE, Vince McMahon and the board reported out to their stockholders for quarter three a $253 million profit. I'm going to say that one more time. A $253 million profit. That's in coming out of COVID. Obviously, they're not selling all their shows. Depends on who you listen to. If you listen to someone who likes AEW, they don't sell anything. It's just how it goes. So you're telling me $253 million. Now, I've seen some of the things these guys get paid. They don't get paid like sports players. Keith Lee's not making $19 million a year. Karrion Kross isn't making $23 million a year. Someone like B-Fab, Ember Moon, and Frankie Monet are damn sure not making anywhere close to like $7, $8 million a year. So you're telling me out of $253 million, you couldn't find $2 million for each one of these people and still walk out with $218 million in your pocket? Right. So the rumors that I've been hearing and things that I definitely have my ear to the ground and checking in with different sources that I have, obviously reading dirt sheets and online and stuff like that, there's a lot of things going on. So a lot of people said that it came out that Tony Khan has bought the Sinclair Ring of Honor library because it came out that they were $12 million in debt, which is one of the leading reasons for them to close their doors. So with that being said, a lot of people thought Tony bought Ring of Honor. Tony Khan did not buy Ring of Honor. He bought the library. So he has the tapes. I think he gets some trademarks, stuff like that to come with it. But he did not buy the company in whole. Now, mind you, Ring of Honor just announced maybe a month ago that they were closing their doors. People had known for a while that they were going to be going out of business. They could not afford to keep running the way they were. The biggest thing that I'm hearing right now is, and this is probably, it makes sense if you want it to make sense. Anything can make sense if you try hard enough, okay? Everyone knows that. The best thing that I think I've heard so far is that Vince McMahon has secretly bought Ring of Honor from Sinclair Broadcasting, is working on a TV deal to either rival on an AEW night or to take over a new night. And that all of these quote-unquote released superstars will all sign with Ring of Honor. Yes, I paused for 4 seconds so you could chuckle and spit your coffee out. It's far-fetched. I'm not going to lie. Does it make sense? It makes sense. If you just reported a $253 million profit, and there's a company over here that's only in debt $12 million, so literally Vince could write a check for $12 million, give it to Sinclair, buy the company, and he's still got $241 million to play with. It's nuts. Think about it. Think about what Vince could do if he owned Ring of Honor. And the thing is, I mean, they'll probably screw it up, but if it was something he gave to Triple H, if he let Paul run it, he let Steph run it, hell, maybe Shane comes back. Maybe Shane runs it. But Vince, just tell you what, I don't want it. It's its own thing. Somebody else take it. Imagine that, though. All of these released superstars, the last group of superstars, I think the Bray Wyatt stuff and Bray Braun, I think those guys were legit cut. They were right when COVID, they weren't pulling a profit, and they did let some, you know, heavy hitters go as far as in regards to salaries and stuff like that. But this group here just doesn't make sense. That you are literally stupid to let someone like Keith Lee, Mia Yim, Karrion Kross, Scarlett, all these folks go. When you can literally wait for it, build shows and a company around them. Why would you just cut them knowing they're probably going to go to AEW? Yes, we know Tony Khan doesn't have an endless amount of money. The purse strings have been closed by his father. He's told him that he's not going to be an open wallet for him or a blank check. But Tony has gone on record recently and has said there are some people that he does like. Maybe not now, but down the road he definitely likes. I did appreciate the fact of him talking about, you know, obviously it sucks whenever any wrestler gets put out of work. Obviously it affects them, their families, and people around them. No one likes to see wrestlers not working and doing their craft. Whether, you know, you hate to see a football player get cut, you know, they just can't go out and catch a ball, and whether it be for, you know, $500,000 a year or it's for $18 million a year. You hate to see when someone can't go out and have a venue or a platform to really do what they do and showcase their passion. You hate to see it. It stinks. But it's not out of the realm of possibility. You know, the whole thing that happened as far as with WCW, why would Sinclair not, why would he not just write a check, a fat check, and be like, I own a Ring of Honor now? And keep it under wraps. Obviously, let it mellow. Let it chill. Let it run its course. Let it breathe. They said, you know, they said Ring of Honor. If anyone read the statement, they said the Ring of Honor is going to come back next year in a brand new format and a new image. Sinclair Broadcasting put that out. They didn't come from anyone in particular. That means that the possibilities could be endless with that. It's crazy. It's going to be fun to see. I would laugh so hard if that's really what's going down. And right under Tony Khan's nose, he bought Ring of Honor and now has literally WWE. So he would have Raw, SmackDown, NXT, and Ring of Honor to showcase all these superstars in. Literally going and saying, oh, okay, well, I have competition. Well, now I own two companies that can have wrestlers go in. And Ring of Honor is totally separate from me. I own it, but it's its own thing. I think that would be awesome. I think that would be good for business. So with that being said, I want to talk about this time, like I said earlier, this time of year, there's a lot of things going down. A lot of sports are starting up. College basketball tips off in a couple weeks. You have the NBA and the NHL. I wanted to go over the NBA. I just wanted to give my picks, my top five, who I got in the East, who I got in the West, who I see as contenders, and maybe some ones, you know, obviously the obvious ones are probably up there, but there's also a couple that put some diamonds in the rough that I really think with some additions they made in the offseason and just the way they're gelling and playing in the first couple weeks, I think they definitely have a shot to go deep in the playoffs and maybe even contend for a championship. So we'll take a quick break. We'll come back and we'll talk about the NBA. Hey guys, John Anthony, Chairshot Sports. You found us, one of the hottest and newest podcasts on the air today. Thank you for joining us. I'm Ryan Solo today in the big chair, usually riding with my co-pilot at the mic. Unfortunately, he can't be with us. Some obligations he has movie-wise and some plays he's putting together, so he's got some things to finish up with that. So we're hoping and praying to have him back next week. We miss him. We love you, Mike, and hopefully everything's going well for you. So we talked about some wrestling. We talked about football. It's fall. If you're a big sports fan, you know it's NBA time, baby. Tip-off was a couple weeks ago. This year, I think, in a long time, I think you see a lot of contending teams. A lot of teams out there have gone out. They put some pieces together. They made some good calls. There's a lot of good chemistry with a lot of these teams. So I just wanted to go through. I want to talk about, you know, the top five that I think are coming out of the East and the West. I've been on record and unapologetically a Brooklyn Nets fan. Being born in Brooklyn and having to endure the New Jersey Nets for so long. it was nice when Jay-Z brought him into Brooklyn. And, of course, as soon as that happened, jumped right over to them. They're no longer the New Jersey Nets, so they became the Brooklyn Nets. But it was nice to see that resurgence and that rebirth and a new blood put into that franchise. And where they're at right now, they're kind of sitting pretty and one of the top two or three picks this year to win it all. So I digress. Let me just start. I'll just start in the East. Good place to start. First and foremost, off the top, the Bucks, defending champs. I mean, you got to give it to them. A little bit of a slow start this year right now, but they have a couple guys with injuries, a couple guys figuring things out. I mean, with Allen, Holiday, Portis, obviously Antetokounmpo, as your main man, you keep him healthy. He kind of, you know, the offense goes as he goes, and when he goes off big. He sent Brooklyn home last single-handedly in the last couple of games. Him and Holiday sent Brooklyn packing. And props up to them going on and win, you know, getting the chip. They deserve it. Giannis is a great player, stand-up individual, humble guy, humble beginnings. You know, having his brother play on the team as well is awesome. You love to see it, especially when, you know, there's good feel-good stories like that. It's good to see. Another one, obviously number two, the Brooklyn Nets. The guys that came up short to him before, you know, not going to the finals, you know what I mean? It's a little, I think, it's addition by subtraction. I've gone on record with a lot of friends, a lot of family. Obviously, living up here in the Northeast, a lot of Celtics fans. So, and obviously when Kyrie came to Brooklyn, obviously people, you know, I got to deal with the trash talk. I got to deal with, you know, eating the crab sandwich. And they're not wrong. Kyrie is an amazing player. That guy, I'm sorry, say what you want about his mouth. Say what you want about his views, what he thinks, what he says on a normal basis. Irving can ball out with the best of them. That guy can call his shot anywhere on that court and get in there, drive to the dish, shoot it from the outside, hitting 10 foot, 20 foot, hitting it from the three corners at the top of the key. Doesn't matter. That guy can ball straight out. He'll drop a 40 burger on you if you let him. Unless you live under a rock, everyone's heard about him. This man refused to get vaccinated. So they have pretty much been like, well, let us know when you are. Until then, don't come down here. So he's pretty much not on the team. And trade talks have been open, but what team wants him if he's not going to play, right? So the team looks a little different without Irving. I think a couple guys got to find their spots with the team, find their niche, if you will. Who you're going to pass it to at what time, what you need, when crunch time, if it's not going to be, you know, in Harden's hands or KD's hands, who are you going to? You know, I really wish they would have waited on the Dinwiddie trade. I get why you do it. I understand it, because at the time you're like, well, we have Irving. We can't have four of you guys. Like, there's only really room for the big three, quote unquote. I really wish if this was going to be an issue with, you know, with Kyrie, we could have just brought Dinwiddie in, filled that spot, you know, and ran a rotation with KD and Harden. But you still got Harris, you know, you got Griffin. So we got a deep bench, which is really good. I think they added some key pieces. LaMarcus Aldridge is amazing. It's good to see him coming back this year after the health issues he had with his heart last year and having to bow out and kind of just step away. It's good to see him back. It's always good to have someone like that on the bench. It's great to have a veteran. You know, he's been to the dance. He's won a chip. He's always good with the young kids in the locker room, helping their center mentor and helping guys out on the court. I really think you're going to probably see it come down to Milwaukee and Brooklyn again. To see who takes on whoever comes out of the West. But I think, unbiased aside, they're definitely in the number two spot, right behind the Bucks, because they give them their due for being the champs. Right after them, a close third, is the 76ers. With Seth, no, I'm not Steph Curry, Embiid, Milton, Reed. I mean, this team is stacked. It's stacked. I mean, they underachieve every year, and it's only a matter of time until they go off, until they go and they go on this run. They're always up at the top three or four, and then when push comes to shove, the last week of the season comes, they lose some key games, they get knocked out, and wherever they get seed, they always run into a powerhouse or run into a hot team, and you hate to see it. You know, you like to see a team like that go and just, you know, they're able to be competitive. And when you have that kind of product and you have that kind of team, they have a good bench too. They have a nice deep bench. They're able to do a lot of things on the court, whether, you know, inside, from the outside. They have a lot of guys that are interchangeable. But I can see Philly, you know, tired of being like, you know, the bridesmaid but never a bride, and kind of making that step up and trying to challenge, you know, Milwaukee or Brooklyn for one of those top two spots in the East. So one of my little sleepers that I have, the next two are going to be the Charlotte Hornets. I feel like they're like a little bomb, and it's building and building. Eventually it's going to explode. And when it explodes, they're going to put the entire league on notice. They really quietly have really good records every year and make it to the postseason. They always get bowed out and kicked out, or usually swept or gentlemen sweep, but they have a real good nucleus, and it's just finding the right parts. And I think they've done that. I mean, you got one of the balls down there. You got McDonald. You got Plumlee. I mean, They have the right guys down there to build around. And once ownership can find that out and get it done and get the right people in there, and, you know, guys that can switch in and out, play at the point, play at the four or the five, you know, you find guys that can finally do that, and it's seamless, and it's, you know, and it just gels and comes together. It's going to be beautiful when it does. The one team, and my fifth pick out of the East is my team that I couldn't stand the New Jersey Nets anymore. I had to take on another team. I usually don't do that. I sit here and I take the good with the bad. I take the rough years for that 1 year championship. But I gravitated over to the Chicago Bulls, the Jordan years, the Jordan, Pippen, Rodman, Kukoc, all of them, the Phil Jackson glory years. Gravitated to him, followed him, loved him. All the fights with the Jazz and the Mailman and Stockton. Oh man, they put on some great finals, man. I'm telling you, that was good basketball. But and I've called them this ever since, the Baby Bulls. The Baby Bulls are babies no more. That they have a great, great, great team. With Lonzo over there, Green, Levine, Vucevic. They have been quiet for too long. They get stung when Derrick Rose went down, and it's really, that's probably one athlete out of maybe, like, if I had to choose, he's definitely top three. I would love to see what he would be without the knee injury, what he could have accomplished with the Chicago Bulls in that time frame. Don't change anything that they had. Just keep him without injury and see where that trajectory would have went. Chicago would have been amazing. I just would have loved to see it. Obviously, it's looking back, you know, hindsight's 20/20. I mean, Rose is definitely making a name for himself now in the league. He's a great player. I think he's starting to come back into his own. I think he lost the step, obviously, coming back. He lost that confidence. I feel like he felt like he wasn't the player that he needed to be, or people wanted him to be. And I think now he's found himself again. Looks great on the court. In the right situation, which is great. But I think, yeah. So I got Milwaukee, I got Brooklyn, the 76ers, the Charlotte Hornets, and then the Chicago Bulls. So we move over to the West. The number one team is the Phoenix Suns. I think, so they brought back a lot of the same guys. They made some good pieces. I feel like the bench was really where they made a lot of adjustments and a lot of changes where, like, I don't think whoever they see that comes out of the East, I think they're going to be a problem. Obviously, you know, CP3, Booker, you got Crowder, Bridges, McGee, and just a very deep bench now to just swap out and keep these guys fresh. I think the biggest thing was Paul was playing out of his tree, but the guy was tired. Booker was getting tired toward the end of the finals too. Like, these guys were so tired from playing toward down the stretch where they need, you know, to solid up their seed and, you know, to win these games. They were just tired. They got the right people on the bench now to really let these guys lay off the minutes of the first half of the season, wait till the All-Star break, and then let them start hitting their stride, getting hot, and just going day in, day out, putting up 35, 40 minutes out there, making an impact for the team. Second team is Golden State. If you haven't seen Golden State this year, you are missing out. A treasure, a treat. They took it on the chin. Green and Curry were eating it the past 2 years, man. Just suffering, getting through a season, just out there, kind of, I guess, just padding their personal points, and just sucking it. Sucks. You know, now they got Poole, they got Looney, they got Porter. They got something right now. I mean, they have played. They haven't exactly played the upper echelon of teams, and a couple of the games have been very close. But going 7-1, coming out the gate, and not really, I mean, not being in the basement where everyone thought you would be, I mean, it's confidence, and that's all Curry and Greeny is, confidence. Those guys, if Curry's confident, then he can shoot the ball probably three cities over and he'll still go in. I think Golden State is going to be, I don't think they're going to go back all the way to the championship and start some kind of, you know, and really just start running out championships like they were. Like the glory days that were 4 or 5 years ago. But I definitely think they can put themselves back on the map and definitely be that destination where people who are, you know, coming up as free agents or want to be traded Because everyone knows in the NBA these days, the owners and the players and I mean the owners and the coaches don't trade anyone. The players trade themselves and talk to whoever they want to figure out who they want to go play with their friends. So I think that might turn to a destination where if they're in it, especially high up, especially leading the division, they're gonna definitely have people that want to go play with them and be in that winning culture and be go deep into the playoffs with them. Third, I have the Lakers. I'm not an LBJ fan. I'm not. I never have been. I just don't like him. He's a great player. But they are not. I don't know what they need to figure out now over in LA. But this is not. This can't be going the way LeBron envisioned this. I mean, you literally have Bradley, Davis, Westbrook, DeAndre Jordan they added. They took him from Brooklyn from last year. And you got these four or five guys on the bench. And you're like, what? Like what, 7th place, 8th place? I don't think they make the playoffs this year. Like this year, if the playoffs started tomorrow, way early, obviously to be saying that, but still, like you would think they would come out, they'd be 7-1, 6-2. You know what I mean? Like they'd be coming out hot, and they've been struggling. They've been short. LeBron's been hurt. I know. Davis has been hurt. Westbrook and Bradley are out there, but it's like, you kind of. Supposed to be a compliment. It's like a big 3+1 kind of going in. Like whenever one of them goes down, the other one comes out and subs in. That's kind of like LeBron's answer for the whoever's big three it is. He literally has a big four without being a big four. But I mean, if they figure it out over there and they all start clicking and they're all on the same page, it's gonna get spooky. It's gonna get very, very, very scary in Los Angeles because that those guys they ball out, no one can touch them, and there'd be a mate they'll go right to the finals. Fourth team, I talked about a little bit in the old school when I was following the Bulls, the Jazz, the Utah Jazz. I feel like they've been a contender the past 3-4 years, are always in it when the playoffs start, and they either everyone else goes cold, and Bogdanović is just out there just hooking things up, you know what I mean, with Gobert, and they're just trying to figure things out, but everyone goes cold, and it's just them carrying them, and they can't play the whole game. And when they do, they can't come through in the fourth quarter. So the Utah Jazz definitely, as a fourth team, I can see coming up, putting the right players. Again, it's all about the bench. It's always been about the bench. And especially in this kind of NBA where everyone has the big three. And, if you're in LA, the big four, you need to be able to have guys that can go the distance and that can and keep up. And you guys got to have the right pieces on the bench and come out, drop 5 to 6 points. And not even that. What I find with guys who come off the bench when, whether a coach decides to play small, play big, whoever's coming off, I think it's one of those things where you need guys who can play defense. How often, whenever your team's playing, and let's say they're up by 23, and then coach is like, okay, we're going to play small for about 10 minutes, get these guys rest. You go to take a piss, you come back, all of a sudden your team's only up by 3. Yeah, because these guys can't play D. They can't really. They're not knocking down a lot of shots. They're not really playing hero ball that early in the game. But it's like guys are hucking things up. They're not really too gelling. They're not passing the ball. Not really running a lot of plays. Kind of whoever's out there is kind of just trying to get some points. And they're not playing D. They just want to get the ball back and bring it down to the other end of the court. But I think that's probably the key, the one key you need for a bench nowadays in this NBA. My fifth out of the West is Dallas Mavs. Porzingis, Powell, Hardaway, Luka Doncic. I mean, fucking the Joker. I think they probably could go higher. I could probably put them ahead of the Jazz. Dare I say, maybe ahead of the Lakers. No, I think the Mavs make a play this year. I think they could contend with the Lakers if the Lakers aren't, on fire by the time they hit that time of the year. And they could definitely match up well with Phoenix, too, and give them a run in the Western Conference Finals. So my top five for the West, I got Phoenix at number one. I got Golden State coming in at number two. Lakers at number three. Utah Jazz, four. And Dallas Mavs at five. If I had to make an early prediction right now, based on what I'm seeing, and this is unbiased, I promise you, it's unbiased. just by going off of what I see and how they're playing and core and who came back, and I can honestly probably tell you that Western Conference Finals is going to come down to Phoenix and Dallas, with Phoenix popping off and going to the finals, and Milwaukee and Brooklyn meeting up again in the Eastern Conference Finals, and Brooklyn getting the best of them this time. Brooklyn going up against Phoenix, and I got Brooklyn in six. So you heard it here first. We got it on record. You can go back and listen to it. I got the Brooklyn Nets in six against the Phoenix Suns in the NBA Finals this year. So book it. Put your money down on it. Make some money. If it's a lot, send me a check and give you the address. Speaking of addresses, always be sure, after you listen to our shows, if you want to see any kind of polls or anything that we have up, we're always putting up news about wrestling as far as the releases, things like that, and sports, stuff like that. Check us out on Facebook, Chair Shot Sports, and also on Twitter, at Chair Shot Sports. You'll see in me and Mike's beautiful face on the header of the Facebook and the Twitter, so you'll know you found us. So with that being said, I'll segue a little bit back into the NFL. We'll take a quick break. We'll go over some of the matchups for next week, how I feel things are going to match out, how everything's looking. And then, we'll go from there. So we'll talk about that when we come right back. Hey guys, you found Chair Shot Sports. I'm John Anthony, riding solo. Mike is on some other projects he has going on right now. So if you just joined us, we're going to be talking some NFL and talking about some of the matches coming up for next week. We've talked about some wrestling, some WWE releases, the issues going on in the NFL with Aaron Rodgers, and also with the unfortunate situation with Ruggs. With that being said, we can just jump into some predictions. So next week, the docket starts off on Thursday with the Baltimore Ravens and the Miami Dolphins. Hands down, Baltimore Ravens. Regardless of obviously being the Dolphins, but the Ravens are just, they've shown me something, and I feel like they're on a mission, and they're taking the mantra that I talked about earlier, where you win the games you're supposed to win, and they're supposed to win against Miami, and they will. And then when we get to Sunday, you have the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and the Washington football team. Brady all day, every day, gonna go over. He's coming off a bye week. He's nice and bronzed. He's gotten worked over by Guerrero. He had some time to spend with Giselle and the kids. Dude is gonna be on fire. He's probably gonna put up 5 TDs, 400 yards. Book it. Another match going on, the New Orleans Saints going against the Tennessee Titans. Saints lost a rough one today to Atlanta. I think you see him come back. They got to take it out on Tennessee. Tennessee looks good right now. I mean, they got A.J. Brown back. They obviously have Julio. They don't have Derrick Henry. Without Derrick Henry, you're not locked anymore. Without that, I'm going to pick New Orleans to go over. Atlanta Falcons going against the Dallas Cowboys. This is actually kind of a tough one. I feel like the Cowboys are going to be a little butthurt after what happened to them today. The Falcons coming off an emotional win, and not, I don't say emotional like crazy, but like definitely driving down, and Atlanta kind of having that moniker of blowing the game at the, you know, right at the end, losing it and kind of giving it up, them being the ones to come back and win. We'll see what happens against Dallas, but honestly, I'm gonna have to give this one to Dallas. It's not gonna be 2 weeks in a row that you hold Dak and you hold Zeke down and hold them to only 16 points, so I'm gonna have them going over on them. Cleveland is going to be visiting New England. This is a huge game. This might, I'll say it in my mind, this is a game of the week. This is game of the week right here. New England, they can win this. They go to 6-4, depending on what Buffalo does. Buffalo has to win to keep up. I mean, if Buffalo were to take an L, the Pats would be 6-4 in first place in the AFC East. And also kind of in the driver's seat going, you know, turn the corner and heading for the finish line, you know, as the playoffs are approaching. Cleveland, great win today. The defense definitely put their stamp on the game, and they're going to be looking to do it again. Everyone says it every week. Oh, this defense is going to get to Mac Jones. This defense is going to get to Mac Jones. It's not. You're not going to get to Mac Jones. You're just gonna have to hope that he makes a couple rookie mistakes that you can capitalize on, get that ball back, and then you can get some points off of. And then that way, if the Pats are playing from behind, then you might see some other things that Mac might start airing out. You know, might get maybe a little shaky, make some dumb plays, and kind of make the Pats defense earn the win. But this by far, if Cleveland wins this game, it puts the Pats down to 5-5 and they go to 6-4. Cleveland definitely becomes a really good favorite to have a decent run in the playoffs. And speaking of the Bills being tied with New England atop the AFC East, they're taking on the Jets at the Meadowlands. Not that that matters if you're the New York Jets anymore. So I don't believe they're going to have Zach Wilson for this game either. I think he comes off. I think he'll come off being injured the week after this. So I got to give it to Buffalo. They lost to Jacksonville. That sucks. But I'm not going to lose any. It's still the New York Jets. So the Bills are still going to win. I think they know what's on the line here. You don't want to be looking up at a Bill Belichick coach team at any point, no matter who's under the center. And I think Josh Allen knows that. And I think that team's going to come out and they're going to play hard. They're going to play fast. You see a lot of points being put up from Josh Allen. The Jags are going to be going to Indianapolis. I got the Colts all day on this. I know the Jags having a great win. They're probably popping bubbly all week before they get back in the practices, getting ready for this game. Wentz looks amazing. Pittman's really coming to his own. Their running game is out of control. It's not even legal running up and down the field like that. And then you have the pieces that he can throw to. It's nuts. It's crazy. Colts go over big on this one. Detroit visiting Pittsburgh. Not even going to take a minute. Pittsburgh wins that one. Keeps Detroit running at 0-9. Minnesota runs over to Los Angeles to see the Chargers. Vikings took a tough one today. Vikings are tough, man. I just feel like every year, ever since Cousins has been over there, they lose a couple, they win a couple, they lose a couple, then they win. Like, they go on this run as the playoffs are approaching. They make the playoffs, get smoked, and get smacked right back out. Los Angeles, they had a really good game today, really good win, riding a high. But Minnesota is they're always a swing game. Could win it, could lose it. You never know. It's hard to bet against them, hard to bet for them. I'm gonna have to pick the Chargers at this one. They're at home. I'll give them that. They're playing in Los Angeles, so I'm gonna give that to the Chargers. Carolina is heading over to Arizona. The Cardinals fresh off a pretty convincing and dominating win over San Francisco. The Panthers getting blown out by Mac Jones. So the way Darnold's playing right now, I don't mean if anyone's putting money on Carolina, that's FU money, because you should not be making dumb bonehead bets like that, and your wife probably doesn't know about either, and you probably need to figure out how you're paying rent next month. So I got Arizona going over on that, plus Kyler Murray should be back, and DeAndre Hopkins should be back as well. So they're going to be a full force, and they're definitely going to flex their muscle on them. Philadelphia flies over to Denver to Mile High to take them on. Broncos, I feel like Bridgewater's getting better as every game goes on. He's looking good. You got a hot rookie running back. You got a two-headed monster with Melvin Gordon as well. They look good. Him and Williams look amazing. I think they're going to do some good things, and I think they're going to keep it going when Philly comes to town, especially them being at home. So Denver's going to go over big on that one. Another good game. Could be a better game if more people were playing in it. But you got the Seahawks heading up to the frozen tundra of Green Bay. We don't know if Rodgers is playing. Don't know if Russell Wilson's playing. So this is kind of a toss up. You really don't know. I mean, if the two quarterbacks were playing, it would be a pick'em. It'd be like, you know, whoever they're in Green Bay, so that's always an advantage if you're Aaron Rodgers and anyone on the team. It depends on the quarterbacks. If I had to go off of with neither quarterback playing, I got to pick the Packers. Jordan Love looked okay today. Got beat by a good Kansas City defense, but he can only go up from there. So I'm gonna take the Packers beating the Seahawks with Geno Smith. Your Sunday night appointment will be with the Kansas City Chiefs heading to Las Vegas to try their luck against the Raiders. Again, the Raiders, after everything that happened, I think might have been a little emotional, a little rough running a game plan when you miss a big piece like Huggs out of your lineup. I think they figure it out. Renfro gets in a little bit more, maybe run some more tight end sets with Foster and with Walden, but with Waller out there. I guess maybe double tight end sets, do some things like that, shake the offense up a little bit. Kansas City, their defense looked great tonight. They looked good. It's going to be hard for them to stop them. Mahomes only putting up 13 points is nuts. It doesn't happen. It's not going to happen 2 weeks in a row. I'm not saying he's going to go nuts and go off for 45, but 13 is a number you do not see that low of a number to be put up when Patrick Mahomes is playing in the game. And your Monday night game is going to be the Los Angeles Rams heading not too far from home over to the Bay to San Francisco to take on the 3-5 49ers. After seeing what San Francisco did today, to see how Arizona kind of took them apart with two of their key players out. LA is just on a mission. They look great. You gotta give it to LA. I'm not saying it's going to be a blowout, but until San Francisco can show that your defense can stop a run, a pass, a punt, a field goal, whatever they, the wind, whenever the defense can figure out how they, that they can stop something and make teams like leery of throwing against them or running against them, people are just going to go up and down the field on them. So I'm not saying it's going to be a blowout, but it's not going to be close either. So I got LA Rams going over on San Francisco as well. So with that being said, pretty much brings us to the end of our podcast. We covered a lot of things today. It's been great spending some time with you guys. We get back together again, talk about a little bit more about WWE, some more of the releases, what's going on with that. We'll go over also our picks and what happened in the latest week at the NFL. So, yeah, with all that being said, hopefully next week we have the mic back with us. As I said before, make sure to check us out on Facebook at Chairshot Sports and also on Twitter at Chairshot Sports. So until then, I'm John Anthony signing off for the mic. And don't have a good day. Have a great day. Later days, guys. Have a good one.